Good morning. Good morning. We'd like to welcome you to this morning's study session for the Mesa City Council for Thursday, August 23rd, 2012. We'd like to excuse Councilmember Dennis Kavanaugh, who's traveling and won't be joining us today. The first item on the agenda is a review of next Monday's regular council meeting agenda. So we'll start with page 2, items 3A and 3B, items 4A through 4C.
Slow down,
sir. Okay. Items, I'm slowing down. Items 4A, that's Lona?
Yep.
Oh, okay. You up to date?
Because we're going on the electronic thing.
I know. Yeah. Items 4D through 4F.
Question, Mayor?
Councilmember Higgins.
Item 4F, I think it's a, for me, it'd be a great time if someone to explain CMAR, because we use that again, and how that differs. Or are we going to cover that somewhere else today?
No.
No. So when you read that, you know, if someone was reading that at home, it's a good time for update. We haven't talked about what all those things mean.
I think they probably owe us about 50 cents because they use CMAR in an agenda.
That's kind of where I was getting at, too, Mayor.
What it is.
I'm sorry, Ms. Union. I was going to get there next.
I mean, they actually memorialized it. So
I know. So that's what I'm asking.
I try not to do that, but I think we slipped this time. Give us a little break for a little mistake today. Actually, CMAR stands for Construction Manager at Risk. And we've used, as a city, we've used Construction Manager at Risk on numerous contracts. Back in 1999, the legislature adopted a series of procurement rules that allow us to do things called alternative project delivery. And we're going to be talking about one of those later this morning on the agenda. And what that allows us to do is use a best value approach to construction. Many, many years we use design, bid, build. We design it, and we bid it, and we take the low bid and go construct it. This allows us to work cooperatively with a construction contractor, a professional construction contractor. We can qualifications-based select them during the design process and then work through the design with them. Many times contractors have knowledge that architects and engineers don't have of materials in the marketplace, the prices, the availabilities, as well as the types of materials that are out there. We were talking to a contractor about a little project out at Red Mountain Ranch. We went out with them, and the architect was struggling with some walls. We wanted some more flexibility. The contractor had actually utilized a modular wall system that's brand new, that's pretty new, and it's very reasonably priced. So they are able to offer solutions to us during the design. They're also able to allow us to value engineer. Many times in a design, you may end up with something, and you bid it, and it's going to cost you more than you thought it was. So they help us value engineer those things out. We're currently using the CMAR process on the Cub Stadium, Benedictine, and a number of other projects around the city. So,
Councilman Richens?
At this point in the agenda, we kind of want to fold in an explanation of job order contracting. I know we're doing a presentation after it, but it's on the agenda, and maybe we...
You're sitting there.
You know, because we're at that point.
Since that's 4G, H, and I, and you're sitting there already, why don't we go ahead and do that?
Back in 2000, when the legislature adopted the product. Oh,
by the way, I guess we ought to formally introduce this. Items 4G, H, and I are about job order master contracting, and this is a new procedure. Is that a way to describe
it?
It's new for us. This is a new procedure for how we're handling some of our contracts. So it's on the item as the study session agenda is item 2A, but since it also is on the council meeting for action, we'll go ahead and take care of it now as
we'll
items 4G, H, and I.
Start right through our presentation then.
Yeah, you might as well go ahead and do that.
Good morning. We wanted to come visit with you about implementation of a new project delivery system. It's new to the city. It's not new to the state or many of the other Valley agencies that have utilized it. but bring it into our toolbox to allow us to use it as a tool to procure the design and construction of infrastructure projects for the city. As I mentioned, the legislation actually, job order contracting, or JOC, sometimes you'll hear people say JOC, was actually pioneered by the Corps of Engineers starting in 1980. The feds actually started using this process to deliver projects for military bases primarily. They used to call them indefinite delivery, indefinite quantity, IDIQ projects. And then in 1999, Arizona put together a stakeholders group and went in to modify our legislation to give us similar skill sets. We've used construction manager at risk. You're all familiar with that, and I gave a little presentation on that. Design build is the technique that Metro is using to build the light rail project through our city right now, so you're somewhat familiar with design build. The third method that they contemplated with the legislation was more for smaller projects. CM at risk and design build are great for the large projects, the COBs, the light rail, the Benedictine University buildings, a lot of those type projects. But they don't allow you to move quite as fast as they would with a product like job order contracting. The way it was authorized then in Title 34, it's really a best value selection process. And what you're looking at is to execute small projects with work orders. So you award an annual contract, cap it, set a limit, and then the legislature says you can then write work orders for up to $1 million per project. However, most of these, I think, are generally smaller type projects. Why would you want to do that? Well, it's a greatly reduced schedule. Right now, if we want to paint a building or we want to go in and modify an air conditioning system, we have to go out, hire a designer, get a full-blown design, then go out and bid it, and then go build it. And when you do that, a lot of times it takes up time, and then you expend the time of a project manager getting you there and getting all that work done. In many cases, if you can work directly with a contractor, they can do a design. I get a professional on board with them to do a little mini design build, get in, get the permit, and get the project moving forward. So schedules are a big issue. Considerably reduced design effort in this process, and we feel improved quality on the best value approach. We have a lot of different buildings. You see us bring air conditioning projects to you all the time. There's a lot of complications in those older systems, and if we can get a contractor in with us during the process of looking at replacing it, they can go out on the marketplace and look at what we can use for products. We end up with a lot less change orders over time. So if you look at job order contract versus design bid build, or low bid as we call it, really we're looking at an expedited project delivery. Pricing is established prior to the construction, so we actually kind of know going into it what the project will cost. There's a best value project procurement. You develop a standing relationship. Many of our buildings require security clearances. We get their workers already secured. They're ready to move into the building. They understand the people they're working with, and it's a long-term collaborative relationship.
Yes, I think Councilman Richards has a question.
Question in the process is this. Who on your staff has experience with this, utilizing this process?
Yes, we do.
Well, who's that? Yeah.
Okay.
Tell me about that.
Okay. So sitting behind me to my right, or actually to my left now, he's in the front row, John Brobeck. John is our will be our central point of contact for job order contracting. He's our project manager that's been setting up the process and getting everything in place. He comes to us with many years of Corps of Engineers experience with IDIQ, the very similar process. On top of that, Kelly has also become certified in job order contracting. This process is led by a stakeholders group that works through an organization called the Alliance for Construction Excellence through ASU and Gary Aller, and we brought him in under contract to assist us in preparing all the contracts and overseeing and monitoring the process as well. We want to do this right the first time and get it in place. So.
You know, to bring up the old Jack Fried line, he was so big on pilots. You know, have we done a trial run on this at all? I mean, because on the council agenda, you're asking for $25 million worth of contracts under this brand new system that we haven't really used in-house before, and then another 12 for transportation on that down the road. So, I'm a little nervous. You know, this is kind of the new thing. You know, should we be considering a smaller pilot first, or maybe one of those areas instead of going all in?
Actually, we did.
And why shouldn't we?
We did a bit of a pilot about a year ago. We utilized one of the other city's job order contracts, and we completed a reservoir modification for the water utilities. We had it on Councilgen, I think it was about a year ago, yeah. And the process just went so well. It really did. And then during the selection process, we asked that each of the shortlisted contractors prepare an exercise based on a previous project we'd already bid and bring in their costs, work through the cost proposal, show us how they would do the project, and that went very well. And the three that we've selected actually are the ones that did the best in that exercise.
Thanks.
Councilman Higgins?
After reading through this, I guess there's something I'm totally missing, and maybe sure. So the job order, the JOC, is with a contractor,
mm-hmm.
and then we're just working with that contractor for all these smaller jobs throughout the year or as long as the contract. Does that contractor have the ability to outsource the other jobs?
Yes, and that'll be later in the presentation. Typically what we will then do is we've negotiated a multiplier with them over a price book, and we can do it two ways, over a price book. And in many cases, we will ask them to go out and get 3 to 5 bids on the various components of work, very similar to what we are doing with the Cubs right now. We've actually, you'll see later in this same presentation, we have an outreach meeting we'll be doing very similar to what we did with the Cubs yesterday to get all the smaller subcontractors involved in the contracts and give them the opportunity to compete for the work.
So then the big overriding contractor is responsible for making sure everybody
gets done,
has licensed and is all correct.
Bonded,
and all that
insured,
type of stuff.
Licensed. Completes their work on time, schedules the work, makes sure that the general conditions type work is done. So if we need a staging yard or those types of things, yes.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Well, looking at that, if you just hear that conversation, it sounds like you're privatizing the procurement process.
No, actually, okay. We're not. We're still there all the way through the process
with
them.
Yeah, but if the lead, whatever you call it, the... the contractor now then goes out and solicits bids out these piecemeal type jobs or these smaller jobs and everything. Isn't that what we used to be doing or are doing currently under the
current system? We were doing that, and it's a matter of time. So I guess in that respect, yes, you're correct. But we're doing it as a general contractor would do it and going out and bidding all those.
Why not? Right now, if without this, we go out on each of these individual little jobs. Right. We'll go solicit 3 to 5 bids. We'll do that work. We'll do that. Now what we're saying is for a fixed amount or an amount negotiated or a cap, whatever you want to say, we're asking a general contractor then to perform those services.
The difference is that when we go out for each of the small contracts, we require the small contractor to carry the general contractor's license.
Okay.
They have to carry bonds, insurance, all the other things we require of a contractor to complete the work on time.
Right. So we're shifting the risk.
We're shifting the risk to this thing.
We're shifting the responsibility, is what you're saying.
Yes.
But we're also shifting the risk to a single party,
right,
as opposed to having multiple parties. Now, let me ask you this. Do you think that because I guess one of the arguments would be, well, this just shuts out little guys. If what I'm hearing you, it could expand opportunities for little guys, because the general contractor now has the bonding risk and has all that other risk. And I think on the forward, you'll explain how we'll monitor that or look to see, make sure that we have a broader or a wide representation. Is that correct?
It actually does allow us to bring in some of the smaller firms that maybe couldn't have bid the job themselves to work for the general, because the general cover, the general's the umbrella. They have the insurance, the bonds, and all those things.
Okay. Councilor Finter?
Well, I don't know if this is the right time to bring. I've been very positive about this process, had a chance to meet with staff. One of the things that's gone off in my head, under the old system, I totally agree with the expedited design, the bidding, having that all ahead. One of the good things that at least used to happen was when it would come through council, it brings a public awareness to a project. And I'm thinking back to the playground equipment under the power lines, and we did that under the old system. It was lengthy. There were some challenges, added some cost to it. But one of the good things is when the council is made aware of a project coming through, then we work through neighborhood services, our outreach folks, and we're able to kind of touch base with the neighborhood and say, hey, here's a great project coming. What I worry about is as we streamline and go through, which I'm very supportive of, how do we support the notification so we can work with the neighborhoods and points of contact that might have had concerns? Or in the past, we've kind of had a hard time really selling all the good things that we do, you know, mm-hmm. we as a city do and accomplish. So is there a way to have some notification other than after the fact of mm-hmm. letting folks know?
Well, we will be including all of the projects on the report that we do for council on the contracts, but I know maybe
Well, Mayor, if we're doing a project in a neighborhood, whether it's a fire station or playground equipment, this is the procurement side of it. That is the public. I think we would public definitely outreach. Still be committed to the public outreach side of working with the council member in that district, working with the surrounding neighborhood.
Well, let me ask, you said you think they would be committed. Are you committed?
No, we will continue we'll continue to do that.
No,
we'll continue
to do that.
I think you may, might be, perhaps. Okay. I guess what I'm hearing is that the process beforehand should remain the same.
What we're avoiding is the low bid process.
Right.
Where we go out and we have to bid out every single project right. with a general contractor that then is like, then it's its own self-contained project that you have to be, has a beginning and end every time. This gives us the opportunity to bring in a general contractor who we can develop a relationship with. And we really think there's a benefit here because while price is important, value becomes a much higher consideration in
it's
these projects.
Price versus cost.
And we also can work, we think, with a general contractor that allows us then really, and it's true, we have a hard time because of our requirements of bonding and expectations of contractors on low bid projects. It really does eliminate a lot of the smaller subcontractors. And this gives us the flexibility under procurement laws, under low bid, we really can't manage sometimes that participation as much as we would like. We can do it by outreach on the front end, but not necessarily by selection during the project. So by having these general contractors involved, we can help direct them to low, you know, to local contractors that can take it on. So.
Well, and I have no problem with that. I'm solid on that. What I was saying on the council approval process, which is when it comes onto agenda, council member sees it, then we take it at the council office, call out, let people know.
Okay.
What I'm worried about is we'll miss a little bit because we've done big blocks, and then we'll know about it, you know, in the next quarterly report, which might be well after
right.
the project.
Right, okay. So, council member, so what we should do, our commitment to you will be that before we initiate these projects, we come to the mayor and to the council yeah. about these projects. This is the procurement side. We still should be bringing to you the projects, and maybe we could have an item on the agenda or something where you are fully aware before we initiate that project in your district, so you're aware of what's happening. If you know of some issues we are not aware of and reaching out to the community like you would today, then we can work with mm-hmm. you on that. Somehow shortchange that process at all.
Yeah, because I mean, and I guess I'm. Yeah. I follow what Mayor hello, Councilmember Richens. I looked at you and it was like looking in a mirror.
Oh, don't insult the man.
I think what you know, I get the procurement side, and I guess I share the concern that we're eliminating the approval side. I mean, I would like some sort of system where, for a certain dollar amount, the council still approves a project with the understanding the procurement's already in place.
Yeah.
I get that. I share the concern that we give a blanket approval for projects when actually what we're doing is giving a blanket approval for procurement, which I agree with you are two separate processes. The way this is presented, it almost seems as though you're collapsing those two processes into one process. Okay. And I think... I think if we can come up with something that retains the first part, which is the upfront notice, the approval, understanding once we approve, there's no contract to approve. We're just approving a project,
right.
And recognizing that we've gained the efficiencies that that the JLC gives us, and we move right from approval straight into implementation because we've approved the procurement up front.
Fine.
Does that cover it?
Okay. Yeah, I mean, if you'll flip to the next slide in your presentation, I saw this slide and it scared the heck out of me. And I'm all about efficiency and saving money for the taxpayers. I think that's fantastic. Let's do that. But when I saw a 35-day start the project, I mean, it was like, oh my gosh, you know, my neighbors, you know, they I don't make, you know, that's a really quick reaction time, and we kind of saw that happen when we did the Mesa Grande Ruins project. It's like that process kind of, well, it didn't go fast, but it had some things.
It went fast, it went slow, then it went
fast.
Yeah,
and then, yeah, but it just kind of caught people off guard a little bit when we finally got to a certain point. And that's what I'm concerned about, a 35-day period to where we're ready to start a project. We just don't have sufficient time to let the public know. And so let's just, let's develop in this before we launch into it. Can we develop that plan before we go get too far down the road with it?
It's the separating the two processes, and I think you've collapsed those two, and we have the project and then we have the procurement. And I think that would solve the concerns listed here, is if, you know, 35 days is fine once the project's approved. Right. It's the question is what are we doing leading up to the project approval?
Well, let us go back and look at that and bring that to you.
Would you do that? Yeah. Because, we all want a really efficient government.
Right.
But government by design is set up with certain inefficiencies because we want to err on the side of disclosure, of transparency, and that's not really efficient. And we're okay with that to a certain degree because we want the citizens to be involved and understand what's happening. We want to understand what's happening.
Right.
Once we get to that, I agree with you. Let's go with the most efficient, effective, and cost efficient. And I've never been a fan of low bid. I mean, I come from a contracting, and I get the difference between low price and low cost, and rarely do those two really match up. So I'm all for this approach where you find the best, encourage them to get the best, broaden the scope so it allows smaller businesses to get involved. But I think we're talking about that project approval.
So, and would council be comfortable if we saw, you know, at least what we could see for the next quarter of projects that would fall under this, brought you that kind of a list? Is that what you're looking for, the list of those projects?
Well, I would like to see some guidelines as far as, for example, if you have $25 million in projects, let me ask you this. If we approve the $15 million on the pipelines and all that kind of stuff, what would come back to the council? Let's say there was a $3 million pipeline project as part of that $15 million. Under the current process, that would never come back to council in an individual $3 million process, right?
We couldn't do a $3 million project.
Or $1 million, because it's maximum money. So a $1 million pipeline.
The way it's proposed right now, we would go to construction.
But, right. But I think that's what we're looking at, because giving a blanket approval of $15 million and not knowing, let's say that $1 million pipeline goes right in front of Councilman Richin's neighbor's house.
Right.
And all of a sudden there's barricades going up and things digging, and also the neighbors at 6 in the morning come and bang on his door and say, what in the heck's going on? And we had no idea because we had given a blanket approval. I think what I'm hearing is that if there's going to be a project that affects people, it comes to the council, there's some sort of discussion or at least notification.
Right.
And then once that, whether it's an approval or a confirmation or whatever we call it, then the process goes really fast. But at least we have advance notice and a chance to weigh in before that project is put out for construction. Is that an accurate
statement? Yeah, and I mean, the world needs engineers. I love engineers, but we need neighborhood outreach specialists too, and we have some, and some really sharp council assistants. So if you could work with that group and develop a process of notification, because the council assistants understand the complaints that we get from the constituents, and our neighborhood outreach specialists are super sharp. They understand process and what neighbors are going to be looking for. If we could just get to a point where we have that, you know, no surprises, nobody's banging on my door at 6 in the morning because of construction, that would be fantastic. And I think we could get down
sense?
The road.
Yeah, no, that's what I was suggesting is, why don't we bring anticipating which projects, we know which projects are going to go into this queue, why don't we just bring you those lists of those projects for your approval to be considered?
Well, no, I get that, but I want a policy and a process established as part of this for outreach, because it's different. This is different. And the individual project approvals, I'm not as concerned about, but I want to make sure we have a public outreach process that is very well embedded with this new job order contract.
Well, how's it different than what we do now when you separate from the procurement? Because right now, we get notice when a
That's what I don't know, because this is a new. This is new. I don't know what the intent is.
No, no, we're not suggesting to change that.
Maybe.
We would just bring that. Nothing of that changes. I mean, we would have the list of the projects that we would be considering under these different tools. We would make sure that that list and location of where those are identified to the council ahead of time before we even go through this procurement process, so you would know what those are. And we could show, my point is we could show the council, we can copy all of the staff that they're
so, for example,
neighborhood outreach.
So, and I'm not saying this is the process. For example, if it were September, you were looking at starting some projects, maybe by a certain date in August, presented to the council, here are the projects that will be let in September.
That would be.
Boom. Yeah. And the outreach would be exactly the same as it is now.
Yes.
Right.
You know, you're still going to be mailers. You're still going to, if I'm on that street, I get a mailer from the city, which you do now, saying, scheduled in September is this project.
We're not changing any of
that. That doesn't change anything. The only thing that changes is that once September comes, you can go ahead and give the start work order.
Right.
And then it starts without now there being a 60 or 90 day delay while, okay, we've approved the project, now let's go solicit bids, let's go do this, let's go do that, and go through that whole process. That's what we're saying. So that's the two parts of this process, the project and then the procurement, right? Vice Mayor?
Just curiosity, on this list that would come forward to council, whatever, every month, would that be part of a formal council meeting? Just acknowledging what those are, how it
goes. Yeah, I think that's whatever council, how council would like to
do
that.
I think in a study session or whatever, okay. Or as part of your weekly report.
I think it's just a disclosure, but I think we need to get to the council with enough time that if you see a project and you've got a lot of questions, that you can raise those questions or your staff can, so that we don't go too far, you know, we don't go to that next step and go through the procurement process. So we want to make sure we get plenty of
kind of putting it on the study set agenda,
agenda
item, so it's
just be aware of that.
And then, like, acknowledge receipts and minutes kind of event. And then we can bring it up as we see them.
That'd be fine. We could do
something
that.
Like that.
Councilor Higgins?
So aren't these like we're trimming trees in a park, that type of stuff too? Or is this only like hard pipes?
This is construction of infrastructure. It's not maintenance. So it's going to be, you know, the park under the power lines. It's going to be replacing the HVAC system on a building. It's going to be re-roofing a building. It's going to be replacing a pump at the treatment plant or, you know.
I just want to make sure that the council assistants and the neighborhood outreach coordinators are on that.
Yeah, we shouldn't change that process that we do today.
Yeah, the outreach should not change at all. Now, if you want to propose a dollar amount or a dollar limit, I don't know what you're doing like we do now.
Probably stay with our current procurement limit.
Yeah, we'll just
stay with the current procurement as far as notification goes and come up with some procedure or process and get it back to us as far as prior notification.
You can do that.
And once again, because I know that whenever there's a construction issue, they're resurfacing a street ring, I get a door hanger, I get a letter in the mail. That does not change
at all. We're not
changing
that.
That doesn't change.
And that gets to your prior notice and your outreach.
Actually,
we're not shortchanging that at all.
No.
So you have three agenda items now, Mayor. What are we going to do with those?
Can I have one more question on the presentation before?
Let's put in your question, then we'll ask.
You know, this was, we didn't get through all your presentation, but, Jesus, going, I know. But we have that, you know, you said it's hard construction, then we have landscaping, so that's where I was confused when you said it's not landscaping.
Landscaping covers a lot of different things. It can cover small park renovations. It can cover walkways or paths.
But it's not the maintenance.
It's not maintenance.
It's repairs, it's replacement. It's
perfect, thank you.
So, Mayor Council, what we could do, I mean, what are you comfortable with? We could either postpone these items, or the idea is we could do these. We're not approving any projects here, and so we're approving a process, setting up the selection of these general contractors. What we'd say is we could do that, but we will not push any projects to them until we come back and start providing that list of projects.
Why don't we make it clean, and since we have a meeting coming up, I mean, we have three quick meetings here.
Yeah, we do.
How about we push it back to the next one until we have something from you,
okay.
If that's okay?
That. Fine.
Because that pushes back, what, to the 10th?
10th.
Of September? That's not that long. Is that okay with everybody?
I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
That makes it cleaner.
Okay.
If that's okay.
We can do that.
All righty. And then, just give us something in writing as to what we've talked about here and explain the outreach, how that's not changing. You may want to remind or review what's currently done as far as, like I said, I've experienced it with the mailers and the door hangers or whatever else we use when there's a construction project going on along in front of. Just as an example of the kind of outreach so people feel comfortable that that's not changing. Is that all right?
Yes, that's good. we can do that.
Okay, now
you want,
you got
what
more
you want
to
do here?
Yeah, go ahead, well, go ahead and go finish ahead. That so we have a
kind of a background.
Good, yeah, good understanding.
Yeah. Okay, so we put this graph in because we wanted to just show you what our, we do look at our workload, how effectively we produce our work, and the different things we do. And many, many of our projects are under that $1 million limit. There's about 233 over the last 3-4 years. So you can see, and every time we have a project like that, when we have to go out for bids, we have to get a project manager, we have to go get it designed, we go through a whole process. Multiple contracts have to be negotiated. This kind of just
give me a presentation. Why don't I remind you one thing? I think you got buy-in for the JOC. You may not want to talk us out of it, okay?
Okay. So,
is there
all
anything
right,
new
I'll keep going.
In here?
Okay. Is there the other?
I think you've covered everything.
Sorry.
I think you're done. I think you've covered it.
So, okay. These are some other agencies around the valley that are currently using JOC. I think we've been through most of this. This is all changing. These are the contracts that are on agenda right now that will be moving. And then, as I mentioned earlier, we're doing an outreach effort with the subcontractor job fair to try and get
this
smaller
This is contractor
firms.
Outreach. This is different than the neighborhood outreach.
Right. Yes, it is. Similar to what we did yesterday with the Cubs. We had over 140 people there at the Bass Pro for something very similar. There'll be press releases and advertisements in the local papers, and we will be setting some goals for the contractor to get Mesa-affiliated firms involved in these contracts and doing work with these contracts, which we cannot do in the design bid build process.
Right. Okay, so I think what I hear is that there's a general, like I said, agreement or acceptance of the job order contract, but just give us a little more comfort on
how
on
we
the,
do it.
The front end, that that's not going to change, or how you're going to handle that, and I think we'll be, sounds like we'll be good. All right?
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, moving on, since we already covered 4G, 4H, and 4I, 5A through 6A. Six B through six F, Mr. Wesley,
Mayor.
Let's give us an update on this project.
Yes, we've got a number of items here, and I'll actually include 6G in this discussion on the following page. We've got two annexations, and then two comparable zonings and two rezonings. The annexation A1201 is related to Z1227 and Z1228. And then the annexation Z1202 is related to the rezonings, comparable rezoning Z1219 or 1229, and then the rezoning 1230. The first set of that is what I've talked with you previously about, the Pacific Proving property, the 480 acres, and the creation of the community plan. We've had a couple of presentations on that. One other part of that total process is the preparation of a development agreement to go with that large project. Staff and the applicants have been working on that development agreement. We're not done yet. There's still some points that we're working on with regard to that development agreement. Because of that, we're recommending at this point that we postpone the introduction of those items till we can be more complete with that development agreement so that we're sure they can all hit an agenda together.
Okay, so if I'm hearing you right, you want to postpone. Maybe here you are. You want to postpone all these so we can bring all those through at the same time?
That's staff's recommendation. Certainly on the ones related to specific proving, those will all need to be on the same agenda. The applicant has, to this point, wanted to keep the other projects that they have. It's the same applicant, different location over at Williamsville and Signal Butte. They wanted to keep those on the same agenda as the Pacific proving. So you know, those could either continue or be heard at this point. But again, the applicants typically want to see them all on one agenda.
Let's hear from the applicant.
Yeah, I must be hard of hearing because I'm not really getting what.
Okay.
I'm sorry to be slow on this one.
Sure. Again, we've got the two projects. One, the Pacific Proving, 480 acres, and 105 acres over at Signal Butte,
So you have the same basic, but we have two separate properties.
Two separate properties. Okay. Two separate applications. The one is going for the community plan.
Right.
The other standard zoning.
Gotcha.
And so they are totally different than that. There's no development agreement with the Signal Butte and Williamsville. That could stay on the agenda as far as staff is concerned. The applicant to this point has wanted to keep all these coming to the same council agenda, so it's kind of up to them, I guess, whether those would be continued or not. But staff is recommending the ones for the Pacific Proving, 480 acres, because we're not done with the development agreement, that those be continue and not introduced at this time.
Okay, yeah, specifically name which numbers you would like.
So that would be Z, it's item 6F, 6B, and 6C.
That's a good question.
6F, 6D is in Delta?
Boy.
Boy, 6 Boy. Bravo.
Right.
6 Foxtrot, and which other one?
6C, Charlie.
6 Charlie. So 6 Bravo, 6 Charlie, 6 Foxtrot.
Correct.
Okay, yeah, and the other ones are the Williamsfield property.
Councilman Richens?
Our next meeting's in a couple of weeks. How close are you guys? I mean, we don't need to do, on a development, Chris, can I ask a quick question on a development agreement? Do we do an introduction and an approval on a development agreement as well, or that's just as a, so I'm just wondering, is, you know, if we're talking about introduction now and we have 2 weeks, is it going to be wrapped up in the next 2 weeks, and can that development agreement fall in
the, only,
the agenda
the only
in 2 weeks?
Thing would, that could cause a reset if we don't get it done in time. That would be that they would lose time on that, I guess. But
well, it'd be the same time.
Well, if we get it done, if it's done, if it's ready on that point, yes, then we'd be okay.
Because if it's a reset, then you just do what you do if we continued it.
That's
the same
correct,
time
Mayor.
Frame. Right?
That's true, yeah.
So I guess what I hear from Councilman Richens is why don't we just go ahead and introduce, work on that, and the worst thing that can happen is we just pull it from the next
continue
one.
Continue it.
Or if there's a reset, then we're in the same position as if we had continued today.
Yes,
am
Mayor.
Am I as confusing as
no,
that's you?
No, Mayor, you're absolutely correct.
Okay.
We just it's the, we typically, almost all the time, any, we have a development agreement we want it to go with its related zoning.
Yeah, and I think you're hearing that
so,
you agree with
but
that.
But if, because the development agreement doesn't require the two
right.
Considerations, then that we could move that forward, we could move this forward on the introduction with the understanding that if we don't have the development agreement completed before the next
be
meeting, then it'll be continued.
And if there's changes,
I don't know that that.
I don't know that. I don't know the development agreement would change these at all.
I don't think that's not anticipated.
No.
Yeah.
Because it really wouldn't have any impact.
So that'd be a way we could tee it up anyway for that next meeting.
Yeah, it keeps the process moving. Because I know how hard the applicants worked on all these exhibits and trying to keep the process moving for them. And so I just like to. You know.
I see Mr. Gilbert. Oh, we got him to stand up. Were you needing some exercise, or does this interest you?
Both.
He's already
up. Why don't we?
Yeah, why don't you?
What specifically are the changes or tweaks that we're looking to?
And Mayor and Council, I'll turn that over to Don Abramsky on the Attorney's Office to talk about some of the details of the DA and what the issues are.
And Mr. Gilbert, based the general thing we're talking about, that.
Council, for your record, Paul Gilbert, 4800 North Scottsdale Road. Councilman Richens is right on. That's exactly what should happen. There's only one issue on the development agreement that needs to be worked out. So we're there. That will be done. There's no reason why you can't go forward, have the introduction today, and stay on schedule. I will tell you, it is of vital importance for us because of our agreement with the seller that we stay on track.
Okay. Now, Ms. Bronski, one issue. How many subparts does that issue
have? Mayor, Council, with due respect, we are very close on
okay.
the development agreement. We might quibble about one or three, but
well, one
we're
with
very
the subparts.
Close. We're very
okay.
close.
All right. Okay.
I'll just keep it on track.
Okay. Is that okay to keep it on track and then let you guys work that out? And when you come back on, not on Monday, but you have really to the 10th to get this thing done. And with the understanding that if we don't have an agreement or if there are changes, that would cause either a continuation or a reset.
Mayor, Council.
Is that what everyone understands?
Certainly.
The reset, the continuation being we won't take final action until we have the development agreement. The reset being is if there is something and we don't anticipate that, that would cause a change to these ordinances being introduced, then we'd have to go the 10th, 24th schedule, but we don't anticipate that. But the way we're going right now, we'll introduce on Monday, allow us and the parties and the applicant the time before the 10th to finish the development agreement. If the development agreement, and actually it's not the 10th, it would be the week before.
Really for council, I think we'd want to make sure you have it on your
on the
study session of
Thursday.
The 6th.
So on the 6th. So you have till the 6th. And we really need to do that because it's got to post on Friday anyway.
Right, but I just want to make sure that so the council can have a chance to review it before
so you
the
have
6th.
till the 5th, the 5th end of business on the 5th, since we're meeting at 7:30 in the morning on the 6th, to finish the development agreement. If that's done, then it goes through on the 10th and it is voted on finally for the ordinance on the 10th. That the time schedule sounds all right?
Serendipitous.
We can make
if
it
it's,
work.
Wait, if it's more than three syllables, you lose me. Okay. Serendipitous. Okay. That's right.
That's worse than.
All righty. Is everyone okay with that?
Yeah.
I see nods all around, so I think we'll take that.
Bye. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay. Seven A through 8B and 8C. Okay. Next item on the agenda, since we've already covered 2A, is 2B. Hear presentation, discuss, provide direction on street naming policy.
I got some ideas. That was it.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. I'm Erin Romaine. I'm with the Solid Waste Management Department. To my right, I have Amanda McKeever, and she's with the Transportation Department.
Well, okay, Erin, before you really threw everybody there.
I know.
So how did you get this assignment, Erin?
Okay, let me go ahead and explain this. You might be wondering why the Solid Waste Management Department Management Assistant is up here to talk about street renaming. We're trying to diversify. I was fortunate to be selected as an executive manager on special assignment in the city manager's office January through April. And part of that assignment was to take on the project of researching current or proposed policy on renaming streets. So once I finished my assignment in April, I went back to the Solid Waste Management Department to resume my current responsibilities. And I was able to take this project with me to see it through completion. In addition, Amanda McKeever from the Transportation Department joined the team, and the Transportation Department will own this process and this policy from here on forward. So.
Do they know that?
They do.
We do now. We do now.
So now that we've got the confusion cleared up, Amanda and I are just going to briefly share with you the proposed address and street naming assignment policy update that does include street name changes. So, like I mentioned, as the executive manager in the city manager's office, I was assigned a project to research our current policy on street renaming because there was some community members in Councilmember Rishon's district that brought forward a proposed street renaming. And at that time, I was assigned to figure out, does the city of Mesa have any current policy on renaming an existing street? And if not, I looked forward and found that we don't. So what I did is I checked out other local and national municipalities and their street renaming policies and came up with a proposed policy that's been written with a very broad scope and ultimately designates the final approval to rename a street to the mayor and city council.
Are there any state or county laws that would apply here as well to try to keep some continuity amongst the cities within the county, or is it all completely up to city council?
No, at this point, from my research, we've determined that it is, if it's within the city of Mesa limits, we do have the authority to make those changes.
We just need to let the post office.
The post office has to
have to let them.
They're still in business? Allegedly.
So we do have a current policy on file, and it was approved back in 1997. It's had variations over the years, and the most recent variation talks about just really limited to three main items: address assignment, so addressing single-family homes, multifamily residences, and businesses; address changes, for example, if you were to take your property and split it into multiple units; and assigning street names, which goes with the Mesa's standard requirements. So again, our policy we currently have does not address renaming existing streets. I just wanted to let you know at the time that we were reviewing our current policy and proposing this opportunity, we did touch base with other departments that use this policy for address assignments and street naming, and they had other updates they would like to make that would meet their current business practices. And in the next few months, you might be seeing them come back to you and making those changes to the policy. But today we're only going to be updating the policy to include that section on renaming an existing street.
The new section includes this portion that's up on the screen right now, and this portion is the foundation of that new section. It says, the mayor and council by resolution may change, rename, or name an existing street within Mesa's corporate limits at any time in order to correct errors in street names, improve regional connections, eliminate confusion, recognize historical significance, or any other reason deemed in the best interest of the city of Mesa. Such actions may be taken if it is determined that the long-term benefits to the general public outweigh the short-term inconveniences. The evaluation criteria for proposed street name changes has been built into that statement that is right there. The evaluation criteria will ensure that proposed street name changes does one or more of the following: corrects errors, improves regional connection, eliminates confusion, recognizes historical significance, and or is deemed in the best interest of the city of Mesa. Additionally, the proposed street name change must have long-term benefits to the general public that outweigh the short-term inconveniences. The proposed street name change policy also lists the responsibilities of the city, which includes notifying agencies such as the United States Postal Service, emergency service providers, utility companies, and other local agencies such as the county and state, and mapping services such as Google Maps or MapQuest. The owners and residents and or tenants will be responsible for updating all other records that they deem appropriate. Some of those could include bank statements, medical records, letterhead, business cards, etc. Someone already mentioned the Postal Service. We did confirm yesterday that there will be an alias field built into the United States Postal Service's database that will allow mail addressed to both addresses, the old and the new, to be delivered indefinitely. So that is one concern that we heard right away that we did do some research on. In addition to laying down the foundation and outlining responsibilities of the city and residents affected by the street name change, the policy also addresses procedures. Shown are the proposed departmental procedures, and again, as Aaron explained, the Transportation Department will be owning it, and this is kind of how we foresee it's going to be moving in the future. This is our first one, so we're going to do a lessons learned after our first street name change and determine if this is going to be what the department implements. But it should, we anticipate, start off with a resident of Mesa sending in a request for proposed street name change, and then staff having 30 days to review that proposed street name change. They will evaluate it against the criteria that I explained earlier, and if staff finds that it meets the criteria, staff will begin a public outreach and notification process in order to garner feedback from residents and or business owners in the affected area. Those results will be included in a report presented first to the Transportation Advisory Board. The Transportation Advisory Board will then evaluate the proposal and recommend whether to proceed with the change or not. Their recommendation will then go to the Sustainability and Transportation Council Subcommittee, and then the Sustainability and Transportation Subcommittee would then determine whether to send it to the full council or not. Ultimately, the City Council will have the final authority to approve the proposed street name change.
Uncle. Uncle.
Sorry.
You win. Whatever Dave wants. Rio Salado, Dave Richards Boulevard, I don't care.
Okay.
We were going for Amanda and Aaron Avenue, but we can do that too.
Amanda and Aaron.
Yes.
That's a nice compromise. Do we usually name streets after solid waste?
There's always
a
first.
What solid waste or what transportation is thinking up for solid
this
waste.
This is, I know, I gotcha.
Project.
We do make a great team, by the way. And so we just wanted to share with you, now that you have a kind of a general understanding of what the proposed policy update is and the involvement of our established boards, committees, and our council, what the next steps are is this fall, once our council here approves and adopts the policy changes, we're going to begin moving forward with the first proposed street name change, which is currently to change 8th Street to Rio Salado Parkway from West Mesa City Limits at Loop 101 East to Country Club Drive. We have developed a very extensive public outreach plan that we begin immediately following the approval of this policy at Monday night's council meeting. So then in a couple of months, we intend to return to you with a detailed report and a presentation on the results of that community outreach and the recommendations of the board and committee for your final approval. So with that, we thank you for your time. Do you have any questions?
Yeah, one question. The only proposed change that I'm aware of right now is the 8th Street Rio Salado.
That's correct.
Okay, nothing else is simmering out there, right?
There may be some
that are, but this is what brought this to the forefront because we threw it out there and realized we didn't have any formal process for making these changes.
That's correct.
Okay. Although I know there have been numerous street changes in Mesa over the history, I think not a whole lot recently, but over the history, there's been a lot of street changes. Councilman Fender?
Yeah. I'm fine with this. I appreciate the effort. With regard to, your statement about other departments, other processes that may come forward in the future months, if you could have someone look at this naming of new streets. And one aspect I would hope that they would look into as a possibility is, heaven forbid, the future loss of any police officer or firefighter. We have in the distant past named streets after those individuals killed in the line of duty, specifically Jack Stevens Street, who was a fire captain killed in the line of duty. So it would be nice to know if we can get something in place, and hopefully we'll never have to use it, but see. That might be a way to send a message that we're truly going to honor those folks that might pass away in the line of service. So just something for the future.
Yes, thank you. Anything else?
And I'm assuming sometimes what we've done is not officially change the name of the street, but sort of have it as an honorary designation too. That we can just do with a council action, right?
Right.
Okay. All right. Okay, any other questions? Thank you.
All right, thank you very much.
And I thought it was great. I mean, regardless of what the vice mayor said.
It was awesome. It was just a lot of awesome.
All right. Here a presentation to discuss bright direction on the East Mesa Circulator Pilot.
Oh, which department thought this up?
This actually fell in here.
One.
The library.
The library came up with this one. Okay.
Okay. Good morning, Mayor and members of the Council. Last March, when we presented the transit services budget, we presented several proposals for impacts with innovation. One of those proposals I'm here this morning to talk about, we're at the implementation stage, and that proposal was to do a pilot route in East Mesa to take advantage of the generators, the activity generators in the employment centers along Power Road, Baseline, Southern, Broadway in that area. There's a significant number of commercial development. There's hospitals in the area. We have the Mesa Express Library. There's housing, senior housing, family, single family homes, low income housing. It makes this area really ripe for a new route and to test the service we get a lot of requests for. Over the past couple weeks, we've been working to get this going. Many city departments have all come together to make this happen. The expected operation date would be the route would begin service on October 22nd. It would run for 6 months through April 20th. It would operate in a counterclockwise fashion and similar frequency and hours to our existing fixed route service. Monday through Friday would operate on a 30-minute frequency and Saturdays on a 60-minute frequency. This route would be funded with the money we got from our local transportation assistance fund, the money the state took away and had to give back to the cities. So that's a good thing. It would be using the estimated budget for that is about $365,000 to run this route for the six-month period, so that would offset those costs. We're going to use a regular 40-foot bus, so we're going to use the Valley Metro fare structure to help, again, offset the cost by getting some fare revenue back. Staff has been working feverishly to identify stops. This area has evolved with has some challenges in making stops that are ADA accessible. So we've been working to make sure we have safe stops that are ADA accessible for all of our riders. And then This is actually a first for the Valley. I've talked to several people. There's never been a pilot bus route. So trying to figure out how to do benchmarks to measure success has been
a
challenge.
We run our buses without pilots? That's what it sounded like. Oh, driver. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Here's the route that we're going to operate. As you can see, it serves pretty much every retail area along Baseline and Power Road, including the library. It touches on two schools, Noah Webster and Skyline High School, near a couple fire departments, two hospitals, and Mountain Vista and Banner. So we feel that this, and it goes through the residential areas, and it makes a pretty solid route to start
with. You didn't mention the swap meet.
I'm sorry, and it does hit the swap meet.
Like, come on.
Along with, Power Center and Superstition Springs Mall.
There you go.
So we feel pretty good about this. As I said, this has never been done before. This is another area where we're being innovative in the Valley. So coming up with how to do benchmarks, it usually takes about 2 years for a new route to establish ridership and a ridership pattern. We're going to look for a steady increase in ridership from month to month. Since we're doing this pilot on what would be the highest ridership 6 months of the year, we'd like to see kind of a steady increase from month to month. We're going to do surveys of the riders probably in January and toward the end in April to kind of make sure, is this going in the right direction? Is it stopping in the right places? What else we could look to improve on the route, or, what people think about it.
If you could include in your analysis, since this is the first bus route, well, I guess technically the one that goes to Gateway goes east of Power Road.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first bus route we have, that bus service that goes east of Power Road, mm-hmm. which means, and through the neighborhoods, when you talk about senior and low income, you're getting into territory that is currently only served by basically Dial-A-Ride, right?
Yes.
It'd be interesting to see if there's any impact on Dial-A-Ride. I would hope that now that we have regularly scheduled service in really a high density wide swatch of the area south of Power, that the Dial-A-Ride would go down in that area. But if you could include those,
we'll look at
track
that, yes.
And include those numbers.
Yeah, we can look at that. That's
okay.
Easy.
Thank you.
So the next steps, what do we need to do to get this up and operational? In September, the Valley Metro Board of Directors will approve or it's going to their board to approve an increase in the contract to Veolia to operate the service. In October, we'll start an extensive outreach program to the residential, the communities in that area, the housing and development communities, to get into their newsletters, do presentations, kind of explain the route and be very clear that it's a six-month pilot program.
And in that outreach, once again, I think we need to be very, very upfront about our hopes that this provides a viable alternative
to the
Dial-A-Ride, so people will utilize it and recognize that we don't really want a dual system going on there.
Right.
And I guess the question is since we're now within the half a mile, I don't want to complicate issues, but since it's a pilot, I guess we wouldn't change things right now. But if this became a permanent system.
Well, right now we offer Dial-A-Ride throughout the city.
I know.
So we don't do that.
Yes, you would get locked into the quarter mile.
You'd be locked into the quarter mile.
If it was permanent.
But it's not a federal route.
Right. We've tried to make it very clear.
That's what I want to make.
That's why we want to keep using the word pilot so that we can choose not to,
Right.
Okay. I just want to make sure
we were very clear about that.
We've researched that we can go do this test. We're not
That's what I wanted to.
We're not locked into.
I almost hated to bring it up because I didn't want to complicate the issue.
We had to bring it up earlier.
You're not touching on anything that we didn't discuss.
Yeah, we talked about it.
That was one of the earlier questions.
The route, because the route does go by two significant medical centers. Your point is
so I think the outreach is very important.
Yeah. Right.
And then let's say the pilot works, then we'll have to deal with the impact.
We'll have to give some serious consideration about,
because then we'll have to go through the hearings and do all that kind of stuff.
Right. And that's the other reason why we're also looking at the fare, because then if something happens, it's easier to go back than forward.
Gotcha.
All righty. So then we'll have a launch event.
I found in my personal life going back is not as easy as you think it is.
It never is.
It's easier to go forward because going forward just sort of happens.
Wasn't there a Bon Jovi song, something like that?
I'm sure there
don't
was.
Get started.
Please don't get started.
There will have a launch event prior to the start of service on October 22nd, and then October 22nd we'll start the service and see how it goes from there.
Great. Okay. Any questions? Thank you.
What does this come up for? Do we have to approve or?
You approved it in the budget. We talked about it in the budget. You approved it in the budget.
It's in the budget.
So this is just information.
Yeah, we just want you to be aware of the timing.
Thank you.
Great.
Next item is to hear a presentation, discuss, provide direction on Discovery Point retirement apartments.
The Metro Board has to approve it. I know, I'm just saying.
Ms. Albright.
Good morning, Mayor, Council members. Okay. This morning we're going to talk about a proposal that has been made by East Valley Adult Resources concerning Discovery Point Retirement Complex. It is located at 6210 East Harbor. In 1996, the city participated in the construction of this by a home grant loan. It is a 182 low income.
Did you have a grant loan?
It's our grant program, but we did a loan. Sorry. It's a unique type of facility in that they are, I believe, the only one in the state that offers a service package to their residents, which means the resident could buy into a package where they get meals, transportation. At least that's what the letter from the request said in the letter, that it is unique to or it's one of the few or the only one in Arizona.
No,
it's not.
I'm sorry, Mayor.
Go ahead.
Are you saying it's the only one, or it's the only tax credit project that has that available? That's what you should be saying.
Oh.
Because there are a lot of senior adult living facilities that have the ability to purchase those packages, but this is the only tax credit project in Arizona that has that capability, right? Okay, and that's a big difference.
Yeah, thank you.
Great, thanks.
So the history on this was the city of Mesa invested $418,000 plus, and the agreement had a interest rate and an 18-year term, and payments of around $53,000 a year were supposed to be made. To date, we've only received about $26,000, and that was early on. The documents in the file do indicate that Discovery Point did present documentation to staff over the years to show that there was no revenue to pay it back, and because of the type of agreement, that those were allowed to keep being deferred because the entire amount could be paid at the end. The current obligation is that it is still under its affordability period. There's a 20-year requirement with home funds on new construction, and that lasts until December 2015. In addition, in the last few years, the city of Mesa has invested about $577,000 in CDBG funds to remodel the kitchen facility. That has additional monitoring requirements of about the entire complex for the next 5 years has to serve incomes of 80% or less of the area median income for that area. The home program required 10 units to serve 60% or less of the area median income. And they have done that. So the letter in your packet is dated April 19th, and the request, we have talked with the applicant here, and we are in agreement with their request. And the request is to pay back HUD through Maricopa County Consortium, because we were a member of the consortium at that time, the original loan amount. Because we are not completing the 20-year affordability period, that money does need to be returned, because they're wanting us to remove our lien documents so that they can refinance in October. But they are asking that the amount that would have been paid back in interest be allowed to be reinvested into the facility. And in your letter, they outline several things that they want to do to the facility to upgrade it and add to the sustainability of the facility for the future. However, staff has recommended a couple of, and staff is recommending approval of this as well, but we would want to set up a revised agreement as part of this process so that we can monitor that reinvestment and make sure that those items in the letter do get done, that we have the documentation for the file. We also are recommending we continue the affordability period for those 10 units until December 2015, at 60% or less area median income. Then the entire facility can go to 80% or less the area median income until the CDBG monitoring time frame is over, which is 5 years from now. So they've just finished the kitchen, so it would be 5 years from now.
Councilor Finder?
What happens after the 5 years to the complex, to the ownership?
Well, they could take it to just a normal retirement at market rates, but we would have to ask Mr. Taylor, who's representing East Valley Adult Resources, what their intentions are.
Could they turn it into a normal apartment?
For seniors, I think it's still designed for seniors, just based on the facility that they have, but they could turn it into a market rate facility.
A question?
Yeah, Councilman.
But they have to keep 10 of them at that, whatever, you just went over the HUD level, because they still had 10 units that have to stay there for, like, ever, because they have HUD.
No, only till December of 2015.
Which was the original agreement.
Yeah. And so
only, what's that?
That's three years. And they have till 2017, if I'm doing my math right, that the whole facility would have to be serving residents at 80% or less area median income. After 2017, they could take the facility to a market rate facility.
So what's been the history for when we've done this over the years? Have we forgiven the loans? It kind of sounds like, you know, before our 10-year here, we actually used to do that on a regular basis at the end of these lives of contracts.
We did not start receiving home funds until the early 90s, so we are just now starting to see these all come to the end of that cycle. So we have dealt with some that have ended their affordability period early, and we have returned that money to HUD, again, through the Maricopa County Consortium, because we belonged to the consortium until 2009. So all of these funds have to go back there. They cannot be reinvested in Mesa. That's the other reason why staff felt this was a very reasonable approach. This allowed roughly almost $500,000 to remain in Mesa and add to the longevity of a retirement apartment complex.
Yeah. So we're... I mean, I think this project, I don't know if you're familiar with it or not, is just, can't remember how many people live there.
It's 182 units.
And I think the average medium age is 82, and is that right, Dan? It used to be hot over 80. And these are...
Like 87, I thought it was.
87?
Is the average age,
I think. And those are people living by themselves in their own apartments with, you know, neighbors nearby. So, I mean, just the idea that, you know, we have 182... average age of 87 seniors living alone is great for the community, you know, because they're still independent, yet they have a support structure. So, you know, it's, if you look at, you know, I hate to call it a burden on the economy, but on the area, that's so inexpensive for them to live in a great facility, like, or a center or apartment complex like Discovery Point. So, and their new kitchen renovation that they did with CDBG dollars is wonderful. Took a tour recently.
It's a very well
and unfortunately, during redistricting, it has moved to Councilmember Finter's district. So I'm very disappointed, because those average age 87-year-olds are great voters also.
Councilmember Finter?
And it sounds like a great place. I haven't had a chance to meet with them or get caught up on what goes on there since we've just done this. My first thought when putting aside all the wonderful things they do, is it a good precedence to set to just before... to wipe out all their debt and then let them go private and have that, you know, go out of the system within a matter of, you know, 5 years. And I don't know, and does the precedence for other of these home funds and projects as they start to come through? Is that what we want to do? I don't know. I don't know enough about the. This has never been my area of expertise.
Mayor,
could
I throw something out there? Because the benefit at this project is currently, you know, the meal plan is a separate item because the tax credit project won't allow you to bundle a service. You know, and at that age, if you do look at all the studies on senior independent living, it's better for them if they have a meal plan because then they'll eat and they'll not have to cook for themselves, which, of course, things get dicey as you get older when you're playing with fire and stuff. So, like the data says, it's better if you can put it all in the package. So by going to a private system, they're allowed to package that in with their rent, which assures that people are eating, which, you know, I know that sounds weird, but it's a thing that's important at that age group. Another thing, we have a lot of these in the city, so I don't think this is going to, like, go through the roof as far as rates go, that, you know, it's still probably going to be very affordable. The sad part at Discovery Point is there's people that want to live there but eke over the line of too much money by like $50, and you know, and they're still down there. So, you know, I think that they have shown over the years that they're a good organization, and, you know, I don't see these rates tripling because the people that live there are going to still live there until they move somewhere else.
As a follow-up, and probably no guarantee, if they go to the private sector, they can do whatever they want after 20. But my worry is, you know, watching how they haven't made the payments, haven't covered the debt, that it sounds like that model's not working. If in, I think, 2008, they showed that, hey, we can't pay the debt. So although a wonderful program that's provided, it doesn't sound like it's cash flowing too well. So is that a sustainable? Probably not very sustainable, so maybe that's why they're going to go to the private approach down the road. So just a little worried. Some of the things don't quite add up. So.
Yep. Mayor. Go ahead. Could Dan come up and explain that difference? Because there is a little difference, and I don't want to speak on their behalf, but there's a difference when the model can include a food service package, because the rent right now is baseline, but so there's not like a lot of money being made because they're trying to keep affordable homes. But once you can package it in with something else, you can make up a little margin on a different service. So that allows them to actually be more sustainable, like other properties that are similar in the city. But Dan could probably explain that way better than I just did. But that's a really good question. I mean, Mayor, can we have Dan?
Well, I was going to say, maybe I need to catch up later and not drag the whole council through it, and there might be a different way to look at it. Just had some red flags built throughout it, and I was going, and if we're going to stop, if they told me, hey, for the next 20 years, we're going to keep going with this, and we're going to keep it, you know, contributing to the community, I would go, oh, great. But the fact that they're signaling, hey, in 2017, we're going private sector probably, and it's not going to maybe not serve some of these folks that we're trying to serve. So for $400,000 or $500,000, let's say, you know, plus the kitchen improvement, so there's $1 million there. Is this a good investment, or is this the smartest way to go for 5 years of keeping this current program sustainable? So just trying to figure it out in my head. So.
So here's what the proposal, I think part of the way we look at it too, we're managing the dollars that come from HUD. And a lot of times these, even the income or the payment back of these projects, these funds, are considered program income, and they go back and are then allocated out for different services. So I think effectively the way HUD eventually ultimately looks at these projects, while they would certainly like to see the repayment, they'd like to see the interest paid. Bottom line is where I think the emphasis has been, are the services being provided to the targeted demographic? And I think in this case, despite the fact there's been a challenge in generating enough income to pay back, it is, from every report I've heard, they've provided the service. And so they kind of get stuck, I think, and also in this dilemma is they can only, they have to set aside so many units for a certain income level. So they you know, it kind of limits their ability to generate the revenues to cover some of those capital costs. So And HUD certainly has supported the proposal that's before. So as much as we look at their capacity to pay it back, and I think we should still hold, you know, when someone enters into an agreement, we should probably look at that. But at the same time, they have provided a service. And I know that there's been other projects recently. I think we've done some with New Leaf and some other agencies where at some point, after so many years of having CBG funds that have been allocated for a construction or a purchase, we've completely then allowed them to take title to the property. So I think the point here is, have they delivered the level of service to the targeted demographic over the period of time that we've suggested?
Which, remember, is the primary purpose of the grant to begin with.
I mean, at the same time, Councilman Fincher, your point is well taken, and I think we have to be very diligent in at least making any agency aware if we have an agreement, there's a certain expectation. But I think the bottom line is we do look ultimately at the final services they're providing. So,
yeah. Councilman Richards?
Yeah, there, just to kind of reiterate what you were saying there, there's a CDBG provides an opportunity to help build capacity at our nonprofit community too. And for a long time, we were helping them build a facility, and then the city would retain title to that forever. And it helps their bottom line, it helps their bankability, it helps their capacity when they have assets that they can leverage to deliver their services. I think just the one thing here, I think I'd like to take a little bit of time to meet with Mr. Taylor and make sure we get to everybody. You know, maybe Dan and Tammy can meet with the council members individually. This is a pretty complex deal that I think it's hard to completely get your head around all of it in a study session, so maybe we should have some one-on-one time with Discovery Point and you guys to really make sure we understand the ramifications of what we're doing here.
Sure.
Okay, so you want to take a couple weeks and do that and then bring it back?
Sure.
Okay. Yep,
we can do that.
Okay. All righty. Thanks. Reports on meetings or conferences attended. Councilmember Higgins.
Yesterday, Mayor, I believe you, Councilmember Richens, and myself attended the ribbon cutting.
Yes, I was there.
You were there. Of Waste Management's compressed natural gas fueling station, which is open to the public. So it's the first one in Mesa where if you had a compressed natural gas vehicle, you can go and swipe your credit card and fill your tank up with compressed natural gas, which, of course, is supplied by the wonderful City of Mesa Gas Utility. So it's a really cool thing, and it's just the first of many, I would assume, Aaron,
and
that's coming our way.
And to put it in context, right now the closest filling station for the entire East Valley is Sky Harbor Airport. So
for CNG?
For CNG, yeah, public. So that's a big deal. There's a lot of private, but that's the close one for public. So it's a big deal. Okay, Vice Mayor.
Mayor, several of us attended an event on the 21st. Allegiant has announced a destination, we can now say, without them getting the ire of the mayor. We can even tell people that it is...
Thank you for being sensitive.
That was such a sensitive statement.
his scorn. Honolulu, Hawaii will be a nonstop destination for... Allegiant Air. They'll be traveling, 3 days a week to Honolulu? That's it just goes to demonstrate the growth. We wouldn't be having a destination like Honolulu, Hawaii if Gateway wasn't truly a sustainable regional airport. And they're getting great patronage out there, so very successful.
Thank you. Okay. Mr. Brady.
Yes, Mayor, Council, we will have a study session, the next study session will be this on Monday, the 27th at 5:15. So we'll see you for the study session and council meeting on Monday. And then I think we have decided that the following Thursday, we will not be having a council meeting. We know some are out of town, and also the League of Arizona League of Cities is going on that day. So
next Thursday we will not have.
Next Thursday we will not be meeting.
All right. Ms. Crocker, any requests to speak in public?
No requests, ma'am.
Good. I'd like to say one thing. In the next week, I think prior to our next meeting, we're going to lose someone who we've come to know very, very well, and that's a reporter from the East Valley Tribune, Garen Groff. And, you know, it's always a very interesting relationship between the press and government, especially elected officials. And I would say in Mesa, I always have other mayors come up and talk to me and express their envy at the reporters we have who cover Mesa City, the Mesa City beat, because both the Republic, Gary Nelson primarily, now Maria, and Garen, we have some of the best. And it's not that we always agree. I think Garen's written things few times, but they report the facts. And the facts aren't always pretty. You know, sometimes there's challenges. I will tell you, though, Garen, it's been a pleasure working with you. You're the consummate professional. And I wish you a whole lot of luck as you move on to the Arizona Department of Transportation. So thank you, because I always ask tough questions. When Garen gives me a call, I always got to be on my best, because I know he's not going to give me a free pass and is always going to ask a great question that many times I haven't thought of. So that's a good reporter when they can.
Well, Mayor, he always asks the most difficult question at the end.
At the end, yeah.
And it's.
Is there anything else? Is there anything else you want to tell me?
You should have told me. Or you should have told me.
Do you want to?
Well, I'm not going to tell you.
Yeah, we had this.
It's a great question, because it plays on your conscience about.
Would you like to confess? No, Father, I would not. No. So, Garen, thank you for doing a great job, especially under some, all of our newspaper. Reporters are operating under, I guess, what could best be described as challenging circumstances with the change in the print media. And I know there's a lot of people out there who are cheering the trials that the print media is having, and we don't, because the print media is one way that we communicate with our constituents. And they hear the good stuff, and they hear the bad stuff, and they comment on both of them, and that's what democracy is about. And I'm worried that as we lose that, we lose one major point of connection with Mesa citizens. And so good luck. Congratulations. Gary, we're glad you're hanging around, because we hope that whoever your replacement is, Garen, we can only hope that they're half as good as you have been. So thank you. And I think I speak on behalf of a lot to say thanks for the work you've done. Have a motion from Councilmember Glover, second from Councilmember Higgins to adjourn. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned. Thank you.